Chapter 17. They followed the track backward from the last car. It disappeared quickly into a massive wall of rock, what had once been another section of the tunnel, but was now essentially part of the mountain itself. "No way out here," Quentin said, stating the obvious. They walked back up the length of the train, past the nose, following the tracks to the opposite end. As they neared the rock wall, they saw the faintest glow of sunlight filtered through the rocks that blocked this end of the tunnel. "It's caved in," Quentin said, "but not nearly as much as the other side."
"At least we have air," Jake said. "We won't suffocate."
As they got closer, they saw something else on the tracks. It was a classic handcar, half buried in the rubble that had sealed off this end of the tunnel. The kind of car with the seesaw handle to make it run, right out of an old cartoon. What wasn't right out of an old cartoon was the remains of the man on a car. He was mostly a skeleton at this point, almost but not quite as desiccated as the dead men they had found in the boxcar. Dried skin and a few locks of hair clung to his skull. His clothes were rat-eaten rags. They could only see him from the waist up, because everything below that was covered by the rubble. "What is this?" Quentin stepped closer, dusted off the dirt from the deck of the handcar, and picked up an old book that had been lying close to the man's head. He opened the pages gently. "It's an old logbook of some kind," he said. "Dates. Numbers. But wait." There was writing on the last page, German words that Quentin couldn't understand, but at the bottom of the page was a signature. He closed the book and looked back at Jake, Kate, and Nick. "I think we just found Edgar's grandfather." It might have been 1 hour that passed. Time was already starting to lose its meaning. They were all thirsty now. They were all hungry. Everyone was doing their absolute best not to accept the feeling of panic and despair. Jake climbed up on the rubble that filled the tunnel exit, trying to find a cell phone signal. There was none. He started moving some of the rubble by hand. Nick and Kate joined him, shoveling the dirt and sand with their fingers. All they needed was one slim gap to climb through, but every time they cleared a small hole in the wall, it would immediately get filled up with even more debris. It made them more thirsty, more hungry. It made it even harder to keep the fear at bay. "I think I know what happened here," Quentin said, standing over the remains of Edgar's grandfather. Jake, Kate, and Nick stopped working and sat down on three of the larger rocks in the pile. "They drove this train into this section of the tunnel, near the exit. Grandpop here was in charge of the operation. He worked directly for Goering. Edgar told us that himself." Jake nodded. "He did." "Goering was the number two man in the Reich," Quentin went on. "It makes sense he'd be directing this. Once the train was here, they blew up one tunnel behind it." Quentin nodded toward the opposite end of the train. "They already had their secret passageways built, full of booby traps leading down here." Quentin paused again, nodding to the narrow passageway that had brought them here. "So now all they had to do was blow up this end, right? Seal the train in for good." "Right," Nick said. But
he didn't," Quentin said.
"He killed the men, left this end open, at least for a time."
"Why would he do that?" Nick asked.
"Because it was a double cross," Quentin said. "The oldest story in the world. This was a perfect opportunity to move the gold out, one load at a time, on this handcar. The railway was empty then, remember? I bet it was just Goering and Edgar's grandfather at that point. Save it for themselves instead of sharing it with everyone else in the Reich. Goering was a straight rat bastard, don't forget." Quentin looked back toward the train. "It explains why the train is empty. And why he's here." Quentin kicked the handcar, then looked up and down the tracks like he was playing the movie in his head. "Goering,
and Aegar's grandfather are taking the last load out. They're going to blow the tunnel when they're done. That's when Geroing decides that having it all for himself is even better than sharing it with anybody. All Geroing has to do is get out and then blow the tunnel on top of Aegar's grandfather here, who now knows he's trapped in this rubble, knows he only has a few minutes to live. He writes these last words in his book. If that was true, Nick said, then he'd be lying in a pile of gold. That last load he never got to take out. Quentin kicked at the dirt beneath the handcar. Then he bent down, picked up a handful of coins, and brushed them off. He tossed one to Jake, one to Nick, one to Kate. As Kate shined her light on it, she saw the bright gold finish, the eagle stamped into the face, holding the wreath, and in the center of the wreath, a swastika. This is all fascinating, Nick said to his father, but it's not going to help us get out of here. You're right, Quentin said. We're just as trapped as Herr Aegar. Each one of them took their own moment of silence to consider that fact, until Nick looked up at the train. Maybe we're not, Nick said. Come on. I may have a crazy idea. He led them back to the train and climbed up into the cab. What are you thinking? Quentin asked, looking up at him from the ground. See if the tank has any water in it, Nick said. Quentin climbed up the side of the locomotive to check the tank. I think it does, he said. Are you telling me this is a steam engine? Jake asked. They were still using those in the 1940s. Yes, Quentin said as he hopped down from the tank into the cab and leaned his head out the window. The Germans made a lot more steam engines during the war. The price of diesel fuel was killing them, but steam was still cheap and easy. You actually think you can get this thing running? Jake asked. It's possible, Quentin said. If this was a diesel engine, we wouldn't have a chance. The fuel would be dead by now. But the tank is closed, so the water never evaporated. And coal never goes bad. Quentin turned to see Nick staring at the controls. He touched the big lever set into the floor, then the two levers on the bar that ran from the floor to the ceiling of the cab. Finally, he grabbed hold of the largest lever of all, extending horizontally in front of the conductor's chair. You took me to that train museum, Nick said. Do you remember? You were just a kid, Quentin said. I didn't think you were paying attention. Maybe I was. More than you think. Are you telling me you really did enjoy all the trains? Just don't tell anyone I'm a big train nerd, Nick said, smiling. It'll be bad for my image. But even if you get this thing running, Quentin said, looking out the dusty front window, we've got, what, 500 yards? You really think we can build up enough speed? Only one way to find out, Nick said. Unless you've got a better idea. I don't. What can I do to help? We need some of that lantern oil to start a fire in the box, Nick said. Whatever wood we can find. Then I'll probably need help shoveling the coal. Quentin leaned out of the cab window and asked Jake and Kate to go find some wood. I know where to go, Kate said to her father. He followed her back to what was left of the passageway, to collect some of the slats that ran between the ceiling trusses. As they approached the site of the explosion, they both heard muffled scraping sounds. Jake moved closer to the cave-in, listening carefully. They're digging, Jake said. Who knows how long it will take them to get in here? We can ambush them, Kate said. Mow 'em down as soon as they break through. They're still using submachine guns, Jake said. We're outmanned and outgunned. They both took armfuls of broken wooden slats back to the train and handed them up to Quentin. Nick threw them into the box to feed the fire. He knew he had to get the water boiling, and that the water gauge next to the firebox would start to fill when that happened. Then it would be time to ramp up the fire's temperature with the coal. After that, well, He was still trying to remember what to do.
Should we uncouple from the cars? Quentin asked.
Yes, Nick said. We need to get the engine up to speed as fast as we can. Quentin opened the door to climb down. Nick stopped him.
Remember how to do it? Nick asked.
You pull the two pins on the knuckle coupler, Quentin said. He smiled at his son, then jumped down to go uncouple the locomotive. Nick wiped the grime off the water gauge. It was filled halfway, meaning that the water was boiling in the tank. Or so Nick thought. He opened up the door to the firebox and started shoveling in coal. Kate and Jake went down the passageway again. This time Jake had his Sig Sauer drawn and Kate had pulled out her Beretta. The sounds of the men working on the other side of the cave-in were getting louder and louder.
They're close, she said.
We don't want to be standing here if they break through, Jake said, surveying the meager pile of rocks at their feet. There's not much cover.
Nick kept feeding the fire. The coal embers were glowing a furious bright red, and the heat coming through the door was already making him sweat through his shirt.
I hope to hell I remember the rest of this, he thought. There were a dozen other steps in the middle that were all about protecting the engine parts. Greasing, lubricating, heating up oil and feeding it to the cylinders. None of which I give a damn about, because if this thing actually moves, it will be for the last time ever.
As Quentin made his way back to the cab, he saw the steam starting to billow out of the locomotive stack. Nick is actually doing this, he thought. He's starting up a steam train. Kate and Jake saw a small rock fall to the ground. Then a light shined through the hole. Kate opened fire, and the light was extinguished, followed immediately by the sound of a man in excruciating pain.
Get down, Kate said, knowing what was about to happen next. The barrel of a submachine gun came through the hole, and several dozen rounds were fired, chipping away at the rocks all around them.
Nick heard the gunfire and realized it was about time to try to get the locomotive moving, ready or not. He stepped up to the driver's console and looked at the various levers again, one by one.
This is the Johnson bar, he thought. Then there's the brakes. Then there's the throttle. That's the order you go in, I think.
Behind him, the fire was roaring. And somewhere in the engine, a high-pitched scream was starting to build. Some valve that probably had to be released, but he had no idea where or how.
Here goes nothing, he said out loud.
He squeezed the handle on the large lever on the floor, felt it release, then pushed it forward. The train bucked a few inches down the tracks. The high-pitched scream grew louder, pierced by more gunfire.
Let's go, he yelled out the window.
The whistle chain was right above him. He didn't know if it would work, but he pulled it anyway. The sound reverberated off the tunnel walls.
I'll cover you, Kate said to her father. Go!
Kate fired at the widening gap in the wall as Jake got up and ran toward the train. She kept firing until her gun was empty. The submachine gun fire chased her as she turned and followed her father.
Quentin climbed into the cab. Nick pulled back on one of the brake levers. The locomotive bucked forward another few inches. Jake reached the ladder and pulled himself up. Kate was right behind him.
Hurry! Quentin yelled.
Kate reached for the ladder just as Nick released the second brake lever, then pulled back on the big throttle bar with both hands. Jake tried to say something, but the engine's screaming was loud enough to drown everything else out. The locomotive was moving.
Kate finally got herself into the cab, pulled inside by Quentin as Jake leaned out and fired at the men who even now were entering the train tunnel. A spray of submachine gun fire raked against the metal sides of the locomotive.
Nick pulled back even farther on the throttle bar. The locomotive kept accelerating, faster than any of them would have guessed. It wobbled on the old tracks, the engine screaming louder and louder, but they were moving. Picking up speed and momentum with every yard, and they were heading directly toward the wall of rubble blocking the exit. Another round of submachine gun fire hit the engine. The wall was getting closer. They all seemed to realize at once that this was going to be a hell of an impact, and that they'd better get themselves ready. Jake, Quentin, and Kate all found something solid to hold on to. Nick was too busy holding back the throttle bar with both hands. The front of the locomotive hit the old wooden handcar first, reducing it to splinters. The remains of Edgar's grandfather were swept up in the next fraction of a second and crushed into the rocks. As the full weight of the locomotive slammed into the wall, everyone in the cab was thrown violently forward as 400,000 pounds of irresistible force met the immovable object. Every circuit in Kate's mind was suddenly turned off. When she came to, the high-pitched scream of the train's engine was all she could hear, the only sound that existed in the world. She felt strong hands pulling her up and looked into the face of her father. Blood was streaming down between his eyes. She couldn't understand why everything was suddenly so bright it made her head hurt. Nick was half pulling, half carrying his father out the twisted door of the cab. Jake returned to her. "Can you walk?" His voice sounded like it came from far away, but she nodded. When her eyes were adjusted to the glare of sunlight, she looked back and saw the front half of the locomotive sticking out of a great pile of rocks and debris. The front wheels were dug into the ground, but as she looked down, she saw that there were no longer any tracks here anyway. It was just gravel and weeds on a long-forgotten shoulder next to a modern railway line. She felt like she had taken a trip on a time machine and had just been thrown back into her own world. "We've got to get out of here," Nick said. He took out his knife, cut off a piece of his shirt, and used it to wipe away the blood from Jake's forehead. Quentin was woozy on his feet, but Nick helped him take a few steps and he seemed to come back to himself. "Which way?" Quentin asked. "This way," Jake said, holding the cloth to his forehead with one hand and pointing down the track with the other. They were maybe 100 feet down the tracks when the steam engine on the locomotive exploded. Thankfully, most of the force seemed to blow backward, back into the tunnel and not outward onto the tracks. "I hope that took out a dozen of them," Nick said. A minute later, they heard a train approaching. It must have been the strangest sight of the engineer's career, seeing the four filthy stragglers, one bleeding from his forehead, walking down the tracks, and then a few seconds later, the nose of a World War II-era steam engine locomotive sticking out of the mountainside. They followed the tracks all the way back to the lower station, where this whole day's adventure had begun. They climbed into their vehicle and just sat there for several minutes. Nobody said a word. Jake flipped down the mirror on the visor and looked at the cut on his forehead. Quentin took out the logbook he had found on the handcar and opened it. He flipped through the old pages like he might find something there that would make sense of everything that had happened. Jake started up the vehicle and drove them back to the inn. They stumbled upstairs to shower and find clean clothes. Nick knocked on the professor's door as he passed. The door was ajar. Everyone stopped in the hallway. Nick pushed the door all the way open. The professor's laptop was on the floor. The desk chair was lying on its side. The bedspread was half pulled off. Nick checked the bathroom. It was empty. A cell phone rang. It was Professor Lewis's phone on the desk. Nick picked it up and answered the call. "Who am I speaking to?" the caller asked. Nick recognized the diamond-hard voice immediately. "Edgar. This is Nick Fox. Where is Professor Lewis?"
"He is safe. Where is the gold?"
"There is no gold."
"That's a lie."
"Do you think we brought it all back here in our pockets?" Nick asked. "There is no gold."
"If that's really true, then I have no reason to keep this man alive. He is now worthless to me."
As Nick held his breath and closed his eyes, he heard Edgar giving instructions to someone else, hard words in German that were probably not good for Professor Lewis. "We have something else,"
Nick said.
What do you have?
We found a logbook that once belonged to your grandfather. It records all of his movements as the gold was taken from the train, including his last words before he died. This book is your only chance to find out where that gold was moved.
There was a pause on the line as Edgar absorbed this.
What does he say? Read it to me now.
You can read it for yourself, as soon as you give us the professor.
You will bring it to me.
Nick hesitated. Fine. I'll come alone.
No. All of you. I will see you tomorrow.
Not tomorrow, Nick said. Now. Tell us where to meet you.
I'll send the instructions over this phone,
Edgar said.
You will bring this book you claim you have, and you will lay it at my feet.
The call ended. Nick just stood there, staring at the phone. The phone beeped to indicate it was receiving a text message. Nick read the text with the exact directions they needed to follow, then read it again, because he couldn't believe it the first time.